Sourcing Matters Podcast. This is your host, Aaron Niederhelman, sharing stories of our food. And welcome back to Sourcing Matters. This is your host, Aaron Niederhelman. Today, I'm joined by my good friend and confidant, Scott Soares. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Aaron. How are you?
Hey, this is our second show in same day.
Same day, a twofer.
We got a twofer, double header.
That's right.
Good stuff. Hey, I like it. We're learning a lot about fisheries today. This is good stuff. Mm-hmm. Scott, a little bit about your background, and then we'll jump into today's conversation. Scott Soares is the former commissioner of Massachusetts Agriculture and served as the director of USDA Rural Development for Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island for the Obama administration. Scott has 15 years of fishery and aquaculture experience prior to that, including a career serving as the first Massachusetts coordinator of aquaculture for nearly a decade. Recently, along with a few ventures, promoting the bounty of New England's waters to broader audiences, Soares has taken the role of Mass Shellfish Initiative Coordinator. Easy for me to say.
Yeah, more difficult to type out the URL.
Yeah, MSI sounds better. I like it.
It does. That's right.
Hey, Scott, so I know you're an upstanding member of society, but have you ever thought about what your last meal would be if you were on death row?
I have not.
You haven't? Well, there you go. Let's talk about that. So, you know, I guess it's a way of saying, what's your favorite food of all time, right? And despite your bad acts and or maybe your bad acts along the way, what got you here in the first place, we're going to treat you a little something special, something nice. One last piece of positivity and joy through the essence of life, through food. I guess that's the idea, right? A little something for you before we zap you. Right? Well, a side note to that. Did you know that the only place in the world that still reserves the right to use the electric chair for execution is our fine states of Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia? I did not know that until looking this up. And everyone else, including Texas, which has provided more last meals than any other U.S. state combined since 1976, used lethal injection. How about that useless fact for the day that you'll hopefully never have to use?
I'm glad we're talking after lunch.
There you go. Probably not the best to be riffing on capital punishment, right? Maybe too soon for this, but nonetheless. Anyway, I bring it up because, without a doubt, if I were in Huntsville, Texas, and my last meal were up for me to decide, it'd be sushi. No doubt about it. More specifically, a sashimi special from a little local spot in Boston. It's like a touch of heaven. But food is our lifeblood and our connection to the natural order. It's interesting looking at something as antiquated as a last meal, or capital punishment for that matter, as it puts in perspective how important food should be in our existence, and how special food once was that it established as what defines our last request. It's tied to food. The fact that I can still get my dream food at a reasonable price any day of the week, and I don't even have to wait until my last request, might give me some pause. It expresses to me that we live in a special time. We have access to anything from anywhere at any moment's notice. And as I woof down my spoils, will I be reminded how special this is, how unique it is to live like a king? With sushi, it makes me wonder if everyone can continue to access this dream meal at any time, from anywhere, without pause to consider, are there unintended consequences of taking without giving back, and are there externalized costs? On today's show, we welcome a rising star set on preserving the sanctity of our oceans and fisheries, an engaged restaurateur trying to make sure that we have this incredible bounty of my dream food for generations to enjoy. Today, we welcome CEO and founder of Sustainable Restaurant Group and Bamboo Sushi, Christopher Lofgren. Hey, Christopher, how you doing? Welcome.
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Thanks for taking the time for joining us in today's conversation. I'm intrigued to know more of what you're up to. And if you could you share with our audience a bit of what's going on with our oceans, how you're sourcing some of this higher quality food, and your instance of using sustainability as an underpinning?
There's a lot going on with our oceans. I just like to start generally with kind of the numbers. So, you know, 75% of the world's surface is covered in ocean. About 99% of the biomass on Earth is in the oceans. So they're a pretty important aspect to our planet. And our planet really is planet ocean. It's not planet Earth. As far as, you know, what we're doing to them, they're being impacted by a number of different factors. One, obviously, that many people know about is climate change, but how climate change impacts the oceans, in so much as the oceans sequester somewhere around 60% of the carbon that we emit into the atmosphere, which actually acidifies them and makes them quite difficult to be inhabitable for some of the base of life in the ocean, things like krill and plankton, to be able to form their shells because the water becomes too acidic. And why this is important is that it's the basis of life in the oceans. And the oceans feed, you know, the vast majority of people on the planet. They're sources of protein. And they also produce the vast majority of oxygen in the world. While rainforests and things like the Amazon are super important to our planet, the oceans still produce, you know, the vast majority of the oxygen in the world. So when you're kind of looking at how important the oceans are to your life, even if you don't live near an ocean or swim in an ocean or like the ocean, like it or not, the ocean's super important to you. And so what we're trying to do is focus on a number of different initiatives with our restaurant company. One, the easy kind of low-hanging fruit for us being that, you know, we're trying to create a sustainable seafood supply chain. That means that we're harvesting from populations that are plentiful, that replenish quickly, and that come from areas where we're not damaging the environment to get the fish. So no bycatch, no dredging of reefs or, you know, creating any toxic oil spills or things like that in the waters when we're going out and getting our products. And, you know, doing so in kind of an old school way, we tend to use a lot of nets and poles and things like that, smaller vessels, kind of more subsistence or one-off fishing. And but we're doing it at scale. We've got 9 locations and we're continuing to expand across America right now. And so we're really excited about kind of being able to have a renaissance of sort of farm to table fishing, if you will, for our restaurants. And then the next thing we're really passionate about too is obviously, reducing our carbon footprint as a business. Restaurants account for about 76% of all the seafood consumed in the United States. And so with that, it's really important for restaurants to take an initiative, understanding that people are going to be eating this product in their stores, to really understand the full cycle of everything they do on a sustainability front. So not only how we treat our people and the wages that we provide our teams, but also, you know, the way we go into the community, the built environment of the restaurants, trying to be as low carbon intensive as possible, as many recycled, reclaimed products as possible, as few polymers and toxic chemicals and plastics and things like that used to build and construct the restaurants as possible. And then also just the supply chain, like how do we get one product from X place in the world to our restaurants with the lowest carbon emissions possible, which tend to be by boat or by rail car. And so wanting to work on those initiatives as well, rather than flying things around, because that's super carbon intensive. So that's kind of what we do at Bamboo Sushi. And we're trying to, you know, recreate the full service restaurant model for the 21st century, where we're providing a premium product at an affordable price point that's better for the planet and better for you.
Good stuff. Now, I saw that, taking us back to 2008, Bamboo Sushi was the world's first Marine Stewardship Council certified sustainable sushi restaurant. What led you to move in this direction of sourcing responsibly, source seafood as a differentiator?
No one was really doing it. And at the time, I didn't realize why. I just thought, you know, everybody is kind of focusing on cattle and pigs and chickens and, you know, sustainable produce and things like that. And so I just thought, well, this is weird. Nobody's focusing on seafood. The truth of the matter is seafood is very complicated because it's a global supply chain. Most of the waters of the world where we source our seafood from, meaning 200 miles off the coast of any country, are you know, non-governmentally controlled. So they're just considered open ocean, essentially. And so being able to know where a product comes from and the traceability of it and all those things is quite difficult. And then on top of it, you know, there's a lot of, as I know a lot of people know now, seafood fraud. People not knowing where the product is coming from and therefore not knowing the exact identity of the product, products being sold under different names, et cetera. So I just wanted to be able to start working on this, given how important seafood is to not only consumers, but just people around the world who need to eat it as a form of protein. And so, you know, looking at this as an opportunity, because nobody was going after it, we thought it was really exciting as a team to come together and do something unique in the sustainable food world. And also we wanted to be based in science. So that's why we decided to go with the MSC and Monterey Bay Aquarium, the Blue Ocean Institute at that time, run by Carl Safina and some others. And so, you know, we were really excited about having science be the driving force behind our sustainability and not just claiming sustainability. You see a lot of restaurants that talk about, you know, that they are sustainable, but then there's no science backing up how they're actually sustainable. It's mostly just based off of the chef's gut intuition or beliefs, or maybe some anecdotal things that they've read or learned from other chefs. And while that's good, it's better than nothing. It's not necessarily rooted in hard data and science. And so we wanted to build a company that was based around true scientific data and the most cutting edge, leading edge sustainability guidelines, and then building our menus around that, and then continuing to improve that as the science got better and better, and then educating the customer in a fun, exciting way, so they became engaged with science and engaged with this information rather than turning away from it.
Really great stuff, Christopher. I'm as a former, admittedly, fisheries observer, who spent, in some cases, with swordfish trips closer to the Portugal coast than the U.S. coast, I can appreciate your comment on much of that fishing activity going on outside of 200 miles of our coastal waters. And I'm curious, with the 9 locations that you talked about, and it sounds like the education programs that you're ramping up, how can you talk a little bit about how you're connecting with your customers and how they're reacting to the information that you're providing to them?
Yeah, so we've, you know, got a number of different approaches. I mean, in restaurants, first and foremost, the best way to connect with them is through the server. You know, we have one of the very unique businesses left in the world today where somebody comes and takes sometimes up to 2 hours out of their day to be with you. You know, in an ever increasingly faster and faster world where people want things, instant gratification, full service restaurants are one of the few places where people want to sit down and actually turn off and spend that time there in a quality way and have an experience. And so because of that, we have this unique opportunity with them where we can talk to them, we can storytell, we can educate, we can connect them to these stories through the things that they're eating in very unique and fun ways. So that's one. Two is obviously, you know, materials, right? We create our own materials. We work with our partners, Monterey Bay Aquarium, et cetera, to be able to take some of their materials and give them to guests and talk about that if people want further education. And then, you know, you just kind of layer on from there, right? You've got your digital presence online on the web. You've got social media. You've got videos. You've got things like this where, you know, you're doing podcast interviews or out in public talking at conferences, et cetera. So we've really found that there is a demand for this connection. I mean, more than ever, people want to know what they're putting in their bodies. More than ever, people are excited about healthy food and sustainable food, and understanding the correlation between food that is healthy and then their own health, and understanding now that cancer and heart disease and diabetes and a lot of these, you know, ailments that we have in this country with massively increasing healthcare bills, a lot of them are preventable by just changing your lifestyle choices. And we're excited that we're creating a product with our sushi and the sustainability efforts that we do with it that actually benefits people. It actually benefits people's health, and it's a significantly better choice to come to one of our restaurants than, say, a hamburger chain or a pizza restaurant or a chicken restaurant or any of these other places that have historically been kind of the gold standards of where people want to go out to eat. So we're sort of seeing two sides where, one, we get in people who want to be educated or maybe just want to have a great meal, and then we can have that story. And then on the second thing, people who are coming in saying, I'm demanding this product from you. Similar shopper to the person who, you know, started making Whole Foods over the last 20 years, you know, the preferred organic grocer of America, et cetera. So, you know, we're excited by the growth and by the change in trend of where people are at too, what they're thinking around food.
Christopher, could you share a bit more? I did see on your website, you tout full traceability of your fish sourced by bamboo. And I appreciate that you have a digital presence, social outreach to promote those associated values with seafood, what you're sourcing. But what are you using for technology, or how are you getting to that information and purveying that to your consumers through traceability and transparency?
Yeah, so it's a couple of things. So one, I mean, we have a director of supply chain. Most restaurant companies of our size don't have that. And he goes and meets with pretty much all of our fishermen. So we shake hands, look people in the eye, talk to them, go out on their boats, inspect their gear, et cetera. On top of that, we then have that cross-reference with the scientific organizations that we partner with. So, you know, generally speaking, these boats have certifications from the MSC, right? They have to. if they're MSC certified, or with Monterey Bay Aquarium, Monterey has been out on their boats using them as these sort of guided examples of, is this fishery healthy or not? And I'm going to go out and I'm going to see through the eyes of these fishermen, or let's say a fishery in general, right, is well managed like Alaska, you know, and then, you know, in general, as long as you're sourcing with the right gear methods, et cetera, the fishery is managed well by the government there. So there's different ways we go about doing it, but it's a lot of hands-on in the field work. And then the next goal is, you know, where a lot of seafood goes wrong is that there's a couple things. One is most restaurants or people who are purchasing at a store level don't know where it comes from. They just call a distributor and the distributor sells it to them. And the distributor has kind of a weird job in that the distributor's job is a sales job. It's not necessarily an environmental preservation or transparency job. And so that's our job. We feel like if we're creating this transparency for our customers, we need to have that. And so we skip that whole process in there. And basically we work directly with the boats and the fishermen. We then bring it into our commissary or into our centralized location. And then we process most of that product and then sell it directly to the customer. So we remove many links in the chain. And therefore we kind of have a really open, transparent supply chain from where it starts to where it ends. And it's very short. And then we talk about that. We talk about that journey and we, you know, invite our partners and people. I mean, we did when Oceana did a number of years ago, their DNA testing, you know, we invite them to come in and sample all of our products. And we're very open source, open book about that, because we believe that if this is what we're preaching, then we have to be practicing it. And so we want to be the best in the industry at doing what we do. And so we have to open ourselves up to that feedback and that opportunity to be made better. And so, you know, those are, I think, our biggest things, especially going forward in this day and age with, you know, social media and stuff like that. Businesses that are trying to hide things or businesses that aren't transparent are definitely a step behind. And so being that this is just part of our business model, we're lucky in the sense that it actually is a part of the way people want things to be now. But that's how we kind of tell that story and also understand what we're doing and know it at a very, very highly detailed level.
So I'm curious on menu development, and how do you reconcile menu development with the sometimes irregularity in catches that come from wild harvest operations? I know, again, reflecting on my work years ago with fisheries, including in Alaska and here on the East Coast, it wasn't infrequent that we saw other species that were harvested along with what they would identify as their target species. And it strikes me that you may have a target customer that already has in mind that they're looking to try something new, they're looking to learn something new. And I'm curious if that combination of what fishermen catch and the hunger, pun intended, of your customers to learn more about where their fish comes from has given you the opportunity to look at maybe plating up some unusual species rather than, you know, everybody asking for cod or grouper all the time. Looking at some of the, I don't call them underutilized anymore, I call them underloved, just because I think most fish species are pretty well utilized at this point. But they're just not familiar with customers, and it strikes me you may have the opportunity to better familiarize folks with those underloved species.
One of the things that's great about sushi is that, you know, people like a varied and creative sushi menu. And so while we have our kind of core staples, the things that people are looking for, we definitely have the opportunity to come and bring in specials and things like that. Have bycatch days or bycatch weeks, as you're alluding to, where, you know, a product may have been caught and then we can utilize it and tell that story. I would say a good example of that we do here during the Dungeness crab season is when we get our trap caught octopus. So the octopus will actually go in the pot and try to chase the Dungeness crab and gets stuck. And, you know, when we get our Dungeness crab in, we also ask to have the octopus brought to us as well. And so that's just one example of many over the years where, you know, we're able to kind of have that cross-utilization of bycatch. But in general, we try as best as we can to, you know, source from places where they're really limiting the bycatch to a very, 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 like, negligible number. Just because that's super important to us, as well as having that, you know, kind of transparency in the gear method and making sure that it's really the best in class of whatever we're doing.
How actively are you with dealing to encourage your fishermen, your harvesters, your producers to adhere to your protocols and your interests?
Well, we tend to find that it's not actually that difficult, given the fact that a lot of fishermen now are aware and have been for quite some time that, you know, the oceans are being overfished. And so they want to keep the job, not only for themselves, but generally these are multi-generational, you know, families and people who have been doing this for a long time. It's not just a job, it's a way of life. And so, you know, now they are sort of raising their hand saying, how do we do this better and who can we sell to? And if we do it the right way, who's going to pay more and all of those things? And we're usually raising our hand. And so we're actually getting a lot more interest in serving to us the way we need it done than we are having to ask people to adhere to what we're doing. So you would have some of the bigger, you know, corporations, unfortunately, many in, you know, Asia that still do it kind of the wrong way. But as far as a lot of the small fishermen that we work with here, I mean, 80 to 85% of all the seafood that we serve in our restaurants is from U.S. waters. It's from U.S. managed fisheries. And so we're excited by that. We're excited to tell those stories, and those fishermen are excited to keep, you know, doing it the right way so that they have a well-managed fishery for years to come. So it's not actually too much of an issue anymore. Certainly when we started back in 08, it was a little bit more surprising for people, especially for sushi restaurants, because typical sushi restaurants are so unsustainable. But once people have kind of caught on to what we're doing and, you know, we've grown quite a bit and, you know, we're the largest buyer and seller of seafood in Oregon and, you know, people know that. And so they come to us and say, hey, we do this way and we want to support what you're doing and you support us and here it goes. And so it actually hasn't made it that difficult on us as we've grown.
Continuing that thread of stakeholder and shareholder values, so looking at the different stakeholders involved in these discussions, obviously the fishermen and the harvesters being one, but I also read that in addition, you pay 40% above living wage and providing industry-leading health and wellness benefits, holidays off. So you at Bamboo Sushi offer employees continued education, opportunities through different programs that continue your engagement and knowledge share for fishery sourcing, volunteering opportunities. There's a lot of other extracurricular activities that you seem to offer as services for your employees. Was that part of the business model you envisioned from day one, or is that something that's evolved over time for happiness and retention and well-being of your employees?
That's a good question. It evolved over time. So at the beginning, you know, I'm just super passionate environmentalist, and I love business as a mechanism for doing good, because I think that kind of, you know, business has gotten us into this sort of hot water, I guess pun intended, with climate change and other things. And so business sort of needs to be the economic, business needs to be the driver to get out of it and using the economy to kind of get out of it. And so, you know, I was really gung-ho about that. And what I tended to find was that, you know, people are much more likely to support something once they feel taken care of, right? If they feel taken care of, then they're like, okay, cool. I can look up now. My family's good. I'm good. Whatever. Food's on my table. I have some health and wellness. And now I can pay attention to something else and I can give back. And so we learned probably, I would say, in year three or four that we were attracting really good people, but not necessarily able to keep them as long because of, you know, the fact that they just couldn't be just mission aligned, right? They had to have more. And so we started improving all of our social programs. And so part of our sustainability now is that it's, you know, it's just totally multifaceted. Sustainability to us means, you know, kind of enduring harmony. And so we look at that from a people standpoint as much as an environmental standpoint now, and understand that if we take good care of our people are going to be able to continue pursuing this goal and this dream and taking care of our planet. So, yeah.
Sounds great. Could you say, I think I mentioned earlier and read that you had nine locations, or you mentioned you had nine locations at this point. Is that right?
We have nine locations, yeah.
Can you describe the concept a little bit so that, you know, what folks might experience when they come in the door of Bamboo Sushi?
Sure. So we've wanted to have it answer all of the questions that people would have, all of the negative things that people would have against a restaurant in the 21st century and against sushi in the 21st century. And what I mean by that is that, you know, sushi historically has been stratified into two categories. It's either very expensive and good, or it's very cheap and, you know, kind of terrible. And people are concerned, am I going to get a parasite, or is this restaurant clean, or is it giving me the fish that they're saying, et cetera. And so we thought, you know, one, sustainability and healthy living should be available to everyone. It shouldn't just be available to the rich. And also things that are just given to a very small elite group of people don't tend to make the world better. It tends to make the world better when you democratize something, right? Take information as an example in the internet. The more people that have access to it, the better the world will be, not worse. So, you know, with regard to healthy food, the more people that are able to eat healthy and take care of their families, the better the world will be. And as we all know, too, who are really involved in food, the more healthy sustainable food you grow, actually the healthier the planet gets. So it's kind of a win-win there. And so we knew that we needed to be a big restaurant company, but at the same time, we didn't want to be a big, elite, expensive restaurant company like a high-end steakhouse, you know, et cetera, or like a Nobu, right? Like that's kind of the standard that most people know of as like an international sushi chain is Nobu, and Nobu's, you know, $100-something a head. It's just completely untenable for the average person to go and eat at consistently, and it also is super unsustainable. So for us, you know, we wanted to do something different. We at the same time didn't want to just be discount sushi because that's not necessarily getting us to where we want to go with regard to pushing our environmental initiatives or sustainability initiatives. And also, people have to understand that food, good food, is more expensive than fake food, right? A lot of the food that we eat in fast food isn't really food. It's not really nourishing our bodies. So by giving people real food or healthy, sustainable food, they're able to actually nourish themselves, but understanding that it's going to cost a little bit more. And so what we wanted to do was kind of be in that middle area where we're charging people what we consider to be a very fair amount of money. Our average guest check is $30 to $35 for a, you know, what would be considered the best sushi meal of most people's lives, in a casual yet polished casual atmosphere. So something that is fun, that's inviting. It is not at all, you know, we're not snobby about it. You know, a lot of sushi restaurants are very snobby, and that turns people off because people are not very well educated on the art of sushi or understanding it. We want to invite everyone into the door, even if you don't like sushi. We have things on the menu that are going to be appealing to you, kind of gateway things. Like we have an amazing burger. We've got some incredible steaks. We've got, you know, some wonderful cooked fish options. And, you know, the burgers are grass-fed and they're humanely raised and all those kinds of things. And so we're excited about, you know, sort of introducing people to just great quality food. But our hat that we hang ourselves, you know, the hat that we hang is really around fish and sustainable seafood, and then sushi being the specific one, which makes up, I would say, about 60 to 70% of our sales. But nonetheless, people want to come in for kind of a well-rounded experience, getting a little of this, a little of that, and really enjoying sushi as kind of the star of the show. But that's what people would feel. They would feel a fun, warm, welcoming atmosphere with good music. Smaller footprints, you know, they're not 10,000 square foot restaurants like a Cheesecake Factory or a P.F. Chang's. They're smaller. They have more of a neighborhood feel. We put multiple ones in a city because we want it to be your favorite local, you know, neighborhood sushi restaurant that happens to be super clean, very, you know, the highest level of sustainability and quality, affordable, a place you would go multiple times in a week, maybe for happy hour with your family. You go on a date night. You can order in for caviar. Or you can pick up with your kids. And you know, it's just kind of a well-rounded experience. So we're looking to be your favorite restaurant, you know, and that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Sounds great. I'm looking forward to you getting some open here on the East Coast here.
That's right.
In Boston.
Eventually we will, yeah.
Yeah, and I also applaud, you're saying affordability, I'm saying accessibility. So
yeah.
getting food more accessible to folks, because it's coming from, whether it's my fisheries or agriculture background, I see one of the greatest challenges is just what you framed, is for folks to reconcile the real cost of food production and to recognize that, you know, the folks that are producing the food shouldn't need to be less than poverty to provide that great high-quality food to the folks who want it. And I agree with you 100% that I think the better experiences, the better access, the healthier food product, the healthier the population, the better it is for all of us, and the lesser cost it's going to be for all of us in the longer term. For things like healthcare costs, by getting at better food product, what goes in, what comes out. So I think it's great that you're moving in that kind of direction, that ultimately does help those producers and recognizes the real costs, but at the same time provides an accessible portal for folks to actually access some great fresh food product.
Yep.
So, Christopher, we first learned about you and Bamboo Sushi from our friends at Bain Double Impact. Warren Velamanis came on and shared with us some of his experience with visiting your restaurants, and shared similar type storylines of accessibility and really anyone having the democratization of good quality food at a reasonable price and still maintaining that experience, which sushi does have an experience to it. How do you preserve the integrity that you've built from your sourcing, the practices of staffing, with establishing scale and building this out, not just in the Pacific Northwest and in California and Denver, but now on the East Coast? So how are you going to maintain that moving forward with this new influx of capital?
I mean, that's the, you know, no pun intended, the $1 million question, right? I mean, That's what we're working with Bain and our other partners to figure out and to make right. You know, where restaurants tend to go wrong is a couple things when they get money like that is they can sometimes grow too quickly. And growing for the sake of growth is never the right thing to do. You want to be constrained by the quality of the talent that you have, meaning we need to have the right training, tools, and systems in place for us to be able to educate our own internal team members to be ready to open more stores. Because what we're doing is special and unique, you can't just grab somebody from some restaurant somewhere and expect them to understand basically an entirely new dialect and language because they have to understand all of these things in Japanese, an entirely new ecosystem because most people only know about terrestrial food, they don't know about aquatic food, and then on top of it, understanding our standards of service, hospitality, the story, et cetera. It's just a lot of information. And so, you know, really dialing in our training programs and our technology platforms and things like that to be able to disseminate this information and have it be sticky to our teams is the thing we're working on right now. On top of that, you know, you've got to pick great real estate. And that's always a challenge, figuring out exactly, you know, how big of a restaurant, what worked in one city may not work in another city, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, being able to make sure that all of the, you know, supply chain and everything is really ahead of schedule, right? So getting your product into that market, making sure your food costs are good and aligned with everything in the back end, all that. So we're working on it. It's still a work in progress, but, you know, we're excited about this year. This is a big year for us to be going into Seattle and going into the Bay Area and then continuing to saturate in Denver. So we'll be in four markets by the end of this year and then probably moving on to Phoenix and Los Angeles after that for next year. And so probably being in six or seven markets by the end of 20. And that'll be really, really good. And so, you know, then that's kind of the ramp. And once you figure out, we're sort of clustering things regionally, right? So you've got Portland, or you could say Oregon, Washington, and maybe Vancouver, British Columbia, kind of one market, California, sort of its own market. You know, Utah, Colorado, Arizona, one market, Texas, one market, you know, and you're sort of clustering these things and starting to figure out hub and spoke model, you know, commissary kitchen or not in each market. And where do you, you know, work through your supply chain and distribution? How do you get your training going? So these are all the things that restaurant companies, you know, have to go through, and they're all a little different. There's definitely a lot of things that we don't have to, you know, figure out how to make fire again, right? I mean, there's some great restaurants, ones I was mentioning earlier, that do have some pretty solid programs. Restaurant companies like Hillstone or Cheesecake Factory, as I mentioned earlier, have great programs in place, right? They know how to train people. They know how to open multiple restaurants. They know how to scale. Some of those things we can use, and some of them we can't, right? Because a lot of those restaurants, when they scale, not including Hillstone, but Cheesecake Factory or P.F. Chang's or any of these other ones, they start dumbing down the food more and more and more. And that's one of our biggest core initiatives we will not be doing, is dumbing down the food, because we know that that is the bread and butter, the secret sauce of what makes us unique. And when we eventually open one in Boston, it better be as good or better than the ones that we currently have today. So that's really what our initiatives are focused on, is how do we build the model to create that so that when we go forward, we can continue to enhance our customer service experience on all levels.
It may be silly asking, given your reference to Phoenix as a potential location coming up, but I'm curious how much of staying with location, how much of location is tied to source? So you mentioned Boston, and you know, obviously there's been a lot of fish production just based on location, and fish restaurants just based on location. Places like Boston, all the way up into, you know, Portland, kind of the coastal communities here on the East Coast. And I'm curious how much of the concept shifts or remains the same depending on where you're locating, again, based on source.
So this is kind of part of our secret sauce, but the location won't really matter that much. And that was something that I originally wanted to focus on, so that if we can get the model right, meaning the size of the store, we figure out our real estate strategy, the training, the menu, the price point, all of that, then we can open stores anywhere in the world quickly and get our product to them.
Scott, final thoughts?
I just think it's really exciting. It's obviously coming from the food, terrestrial food side. I think we're really starting to see even more excitement on the aquatic food side. The old know your farmer, know your food that was a term coined several years back, I think, is starting to finally seep in. And I think what you're doing, Christopher, with Bamboo Sushi is demonstrating that. I mean, the fact that you can even talk about opening a similar concept in mid or southwest United States, far away from places where fish are harvested, of course, unless they're farm raised, then I think it's a great indication of that we're heading in the right direction.
And thank you,
Christopher. Where can our listening audience learn more about your current 9 locations, about your sourcing practices, and when you'll be opening and expanding to the East Coast? Is your website the best spot?
The website's the best spot. Yeah, just www.bambusushi.com. And then we've got a sister brand called Quickfish as well, which is our fast casual brand. And then Sustainable Restaurant Group is our sort of parent company. And through those three, but, you know, Bamboo has links to all of them, you can kind of learn more about our company and what we're doing.
I'll close by saying that it seems that engaging more consumers in the values of our food seems to be what will protect and preserve it moving forward. So it sounds like, Scott, from what I'm seeing, that my last meal will be preserved moving forward. So I don't have anything to worry about. All taken care of, right? So if I'm down exactly. in Texas and I'm stuck, I can always say I want Bamboo Sushi as my last meal. We'll be all taken care of, all
I'll
set.
Be right there with you.
Fantastic. Christopher, I want to thank you for taking the time to share these thoughts with our listening audience. I learned a great deal. Scott?
Yeah, absolutely.
Always
fantastic.
Good stuff. So thank you for taking the time to share and to spread the word of sustainable and responsible fisheries.
Thanks, gentlemen. I appreciate it.